Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Okay, our first session we covered yesterday was on Define It. We defined what's the target, what are we shooting for? We say creating a disciple-making culture. What is a disciple? What do we mean by that? Have we defined it? So we defined it. We also talked about the value of relationship. Made a real biblical strong stance on that. What does the Bible say about relationship and how does that play out in making disciples? Then we talked about Live It, creating relational environments for disciple-making. The last session we talked a lot about what kind of environments, what does it mean by live it out? Yeah, and we did tape it, so you can definitely get a copy of that. I don't know who to point to that for taping it, so we'll have to find the Jason. You can make a link. Awesome. So Jason's the guy to see. You can make a link. If we end up putting the link up on the computer at some point, it would be good. Okay. So we talked about now we're on Align It. So aligning it, intentionally aligning your culture towards disciple making. Well, I want to intro. This is Jim Putman. Him and Aaron actually together both planted Real Life Ministries in Pulse Falls about 17 years ago. And I don't know if you know, if you're familiar with Real Life Story, but it grew really, really fast. And out of there, we planted seven other churches, and it's continued to grow. Jim has written the book "Church is a Team Sport," Disciple Shift, and Real Life Discipleship, and now coming out with The Power of Together. That'll come out in June. And so, Jim, appreciate you being here. Appreciate you willing to talk about alignment. All right. Aaron Couch, him and Jim came together to help plant Real Life Ministries in Pulse Falls. Then, I don't know, Aaron, you're on staff for 8, 9, I don't know how many years before you felt called to go plant a church in Moscow on the Palouse. And so Aaron's very passionate about making disciples as well. And when he planted that church, it had a very similar effect. It took a while to get things going when you're investing heavy on relationship, and then it kind of did the J curve. And a lot of our church plans tend to do this. It takes a while. We move Sunday launch out a little bit. We don't start with a Sunday launch. We start with heavily investing in the core team. And that's what Aaron has done a great job of investing in his team, and the church has continued to grow. And so, well, they're pretty good size. So thanks, Aaron, for being here. Thanks for being passionate about making disciples. So here's the format we're going to do. We're going to do a 20-minute interview. I'm going to throw them a couple questions. We'll go 20 minutes that way. Then we're going to do 20 minutes of a Q&A. You guys are going to ask any questions you have, throw them at Jim and Aaron. And then the last 20 minutes, we're going to do table discussions at your table. And who's going to lead those discussions is we've invited 11 churches out of our network. We just said, hey, would you be willing to fly here at your own cost, your own dollar, and sit at these tables and invest? And whoever shows up, we don't know if anybody's even going to show. But we just took a gamble and said, would you do that? And so if you're part of the network, you've taken time away from your role as a senior pastor, executive pastor, small groups pastor, all that. If you've flown here and you're at one of these tables, would you raise your hand so we can see who's in the network, who's willing to lead a table discussion? Awesome. Thank you, guys. And so if you don't have a network person at your table, raise your hand and we'll put one there. Okay, so here's one. Back there's one. Here's one. So we got four. So we need four more network folks back here. So we got one. Thank you, Don. Not Moscow, Russia. Good point. Yeah, Moscow, Idaho. Thank you. Moscow, Idaho. That's true. Even though he does look a little Russian. I do owe Aaron quite a bit of harassing because he leads a lot of trips to Israel. And the last trip we went to Israel, guess how many miles we hiked? We hiked like this and like this. It set a record. What's that? 84 miles. 84 miles. Yeah, it was painful. All right. So first question. Who am I throwing the first question to? Aaron. So Aaron, when you went down to the Palouse, we're talking about aligning it. And I know that when you went down there to plant a church, you had to figure a lot of stuff out when it comes to alignment. Would you speak to kind of that journey and what you did as you got there, and how does alignment play out on things?
Thank you, comrade. I will break you. And in Luke's case, it won't be hard.
It's true. He's telling the truth.
I told you, don't poke me and give me the mic. So we're going to talk about alignment. And basically, when we start talking about alignment, the essential definition in my mind is you have this thing that you want to be. When you're in church, you have a target that you're aiming at, a vision of what you want to become, however you want to word it. And the question is, how do you get people from where they are to that? That's alignment. How do I move them to that? That would be being aligned. And so how many of you guys are church planters right now? You're in the process of planting. So here's what we did. We parachute dropped. Anybody parachute dropping? Yeah, it was like, hey, here's this town that you've never been in before. Go put a church there, which was great. That's highly not recommended to do, but we did that, and so we basically didn't know anything about the community. One of the first things that I was committed to is we did not want to steal from other churches. And I know everybody says that. No, everybody says I don't want to blow up one church to build another one because that doesn't advance the kingdom. Everybody says that, but the problem is we all go to the same watering holes that everybody else is pulling from to get people, so we wind up shaving off. And so one of the phrases that we developed early is this: we're going to go where no other church is going so we can reach who no other church is reaching. And we were serious about that. And so we did crazy things and didn't do certain things that churches do. Like we have a harvest party because we don't say Halloween, you know, the whatever. If there was another church doing it in our community, we didn't. There was an Easter egg hunt. And it seemed like all the good holidays were taken. So we were like, we don't know what to do, you know, with that. We don't know what to do. And the thing is, in when we were in Post Falls, those were things that we had leveraged to be very effective in community outreach. But we were committed to saying, we're not going to the same watering holes. We're not doing that. And so we're going to go where no one else is going so that we can reach who no one else is reaching. And that is a strategic conversation. So that's the first piece. Now, what you have to know is, when you're going to go there, you're going to get the kind of people that you want to reach, and you're going to realize that you grabbed a tiger by the tail, and you're going to have to figure out, did you really want to reach these people? Because they're messy, and it's painfully inefficient, and they don't know how to act, and they don't know. They don't know Jesus and Christ are the same person. They don't know that. And so you can't expect them. So your expectations are really important. But another piece of us coming into the community was we wanted to be real familiar with the history of what had been done in the name of Jesus in the community that we were serving. That was really important for us because what we found was that in the first year of that church plant, I never said so many times in my whole life, people who love Jesus aren't supposed to act that way. I was like, I cannot believe the story you're telling me. Oh, yeah. Oh, it gets worse. And just when I thought I'd heard the worst story that I'd ever heard in my life, they're like, oh, no, let me tell you this. And I was like, it was just unbelievable. And so we had to really be careful about undoing a lot of what had been done. A lot of the perceptions, I'm in an area with two small communities with two major universities. So we're a very liberal area, very academic area, very educated. Like, these are not people that are going to be emotionally swayed because somebody got up and jumped around a stage. These are people that are like, you better have your crap together and know what you're talking about. And don't sound foolish, because if you do, I don't want to listen to you. And so we had to be real careful about that. We had to be real careful about how we frame things like the homosexual conversation. How do we frame conversations about abortion? Politics. We're in the reddest state in the union, and we are all blue. Like, that is this unique area that I sit in, and so we have to be super careful about, because the truth is, I can come in and swing a big stick all I want to, but if, is it John Maxwell that says, if you think you're leading and no one's following you, you're only taking a walk? Like, you got to know who you're talking to and how you can move them. You got to know that. So that was one piece, the unchurched piece. And then what we found, here's the thing. When I came down from Post Falls, it's quite a thing for you to say, I want the church to do this, and however many thousand people are like, yes, they just buy into it. Which is where we were at, because we had relationship, people that trust the culture, trust the system, trust the church, which was great. I went down to Moscow. Nobody knew who I was or whatever. And so I was like, we want to do this. And they were like, no. Glad we had this time together. I mean, that was really as extensive as it was. And so we had to begin to really back up and say, okay, wait a minute. We got to figure out how to speak to these people in a way that they could heal. And because so many bad things have been done in the name of Jesus, not only was the non-Christian community real tense about church, but the Christian community was real tense about church. There's a huge de-church population where I was at. And that was a piece of the... And so how do I communicate? How do they get them from there to here? How do I get them from there to here? To this thing that I believe. And so what we had to do was to take this thing, this picture of what we believed the church could be and should be, we had to break it into digestible chunks, right? To take a person who's last week they were using heroin, and now I'm like, you're going to be a disciple maker. They're like, I just want to be able to get dressed in the morning. Like, that's really where they're at. And so that's too far. That's too far. But we could teach this. Everybody needs somebody that believes in them. Everybody needs somebody that believes in them. And not only do you need that person, but you can be that person for somebody. Not for everybody, but for... So for the first year, we started off, and I mean, I was out of the gate. Big vision, dreams, let's look at what it could be. And people were just not capable of processing it. They just weren't in a place where they could take that in. And so we had to make adjustments. So really what we did was, very early on for the first year, we preached nothing but relationship. Every sermon, because that's the first digestible chunk. You have to be committed to relationship. If you're not, then none of the other dominoes matter. We can talk about all this great truth, but if it's not set in this context of a life committed to relationship with God and with one another, then it doesn't matter. So that was the first digestible chunk. It took a year before we felt like people were ready to move off of that, which for somebody like me, and if you're a church planner, you know this, like you're wired for intense, like let's go, you know, let's do it. We had to slow down. And, oh, and by the way, it's about relationship again. And then the next week, oh, and by the way, this is why we're in relationship again. Whatever your sermon topics are, if you can't tie it back to that, like here's the first digestible chunk. We got to move people in a way that they can move, which leads me to one last little piece, and then I'll talk about a bunch of other things. No, I'll just give up the mic. When you're in a church plant situation and you start thinking about aligning, like the question, one of the questions that we wrestle with in our network is, because we believe in relationships, so everything's built out of small groups. Not because small groups is the perfect system, but because it's the best system we know of to be able to get people in the kinds of environments where discipleship can happen relationally. So, do we fight for the DNA of small groups and we don't start services? And some of you transition churches can resonate with this one. Or do we start services and then try to get people on the back end? And this is just debate back and forth. Here's the position we landed on to be able to move people forward. And then you can chew on it as a table and chew on it with your team. We had people that kept saying we have friends that want to come, but they don't want to come to a small group. And we were like, but small groups is who we are. And they're like, yeah, but we can't. Okay. Got to figure out how to get them from where they are to this, whatever this thing is for me. We made a decision to say, if I'm going to be in a position where I can speak in a way that the Holy Spirit can work in your heart to do whatever he's going to do, I have to be some level of contact with you. And so we made a decision to start services, preview services at first. And, I mean, you're all familiar with that, but to start services for the purpose of taking people from where they were to where we wanted them to be. Now, we've had other churches that have done it the other way. No, until this is established, we're not moving. And that's okay. They can do that. But for us, for me, it's about the relational journey together of the influence. That's how. That's the best way. And when I'm in relationship with you, I understand how to get you from there to here. Does that make sense? So those are the kind of things for me, whatever the environment is that you create, it's got to be something that's relational that gets you from there to here. That's how we get aligned.
Thank you, Aaron. On alignment, this is one of Jim's passions. And after golfing with him, I understand why he was so good at it. He got a lot of practice at alignment.
Boo. Did you hear that? It won't stop him. He'll just do it anyway. Let me just give you some tangible steps that it's really hard to go through all of this. Again, there's stuff in books to read. All we can do is skip along the top of the water. But again, if we get into relationship, then there's a lot of conversations where we can have these conversations. It's not built on a seminar. It's built on relationship. And then we can talk. That's what the network is all about. And we can say, well, this is how we did it. And, oh, I see your context. And, yeah, that might be better. And relationship is key to discipleship, whether you're being discipled as an individual or you're being discipled as a pastor. Relationship is key. All right, let me just give you some keys to alignment. Number one, common language, common definition of terms. The Bible says that a house divided against itself can't stand. Tower of Babel's going up one day, next day, can't continue. What happened? Change language, right? In football, you can have players that play all over the place, but before we can be a team, we have to have a common playbook, common language, common set of plays. We all understand our part, our language. When you start a church, you got people that typically will be a part of your core team that have a completely different language. You can think you're saying one thing and they understand, but you're speaking from your definition of the word. They have a different definition of a word, and therefore we're really not on the same page. All of us who have been married understand this. Amen? And then there's a process of getting on the same page by... So having a common language where you don't just accept that we said the same word, so we mean the same thing. Getting people on the same page. Very important. Secondly, even, you know, I'll just give you an example I've used in the other things. We do a conference where we used to do it this way, where we'd have whole teams come, and they'd be like a whole team of people right here, and it's a discipleship conference, and I'd ask the question, how many of you think we should be about disciple-making in the church? And the church that's here with their whole teams all says yes. So we used to give them a piece of paper and say, write the definition of a disciple. And not one of them, they didn't know. I said, don't talk to each other. Pass them the middle. Read them. They're not even the same. They're supposed to be a team. They don't have the same language. They don't define things the same way. It doesn't matter how talented you are and what play you call in the huddle. If you go to the line of scrimmage, you don't understand your part, you don't have a common language, you don't win. Make sense? What is the purpose of the church? Better have a definition of that, because even in our Aaron and I went together, we started asking, what do you guys all think that the purpose of the church is? And the only two that were on the same page was Aaron and I, and we had this group of four other couples that it's to worship the Lord. Well, it's to win people to Jesus. Well, it's to be a spiritual family. Well, it was a bunch of different things that all could be true, but in each of their mind, their version was the primary version, and they would be pulling for something different. Make sense to you? So have a set understanding of the purpose. Set language. When you're talking about alignment and you've got, and it starts to grow and you have a worship ministry and a children's ministry, and they can oftentimes develop their own language, and then you start creating silos and they start pulling for different things. When you're talking about a system, and they took our pens too. Oh, when you're talking about a system, in our church, we go by a funnel, and the weekend services, we have the 101 class, which, by the way, the 101 class, to be on our church, you have to, before you can serve in any way, you have to be a member. That's our playbook. I tell people, you can get mad about membership all you want, But in football, if you want to play, you got to go by the playbook. You've been playing football by a bunch of different ways. We're going to have a playbook. You're going to take a 101 class, right? So that's where we get a common language, a common definition of things. We've got celebrate recovery and marriage and family counseling, right? And then down here, it's our community systems, and they're broken into communities, right, where it's geographically based home groups. Well, I don't want the weekend service people to be pulling that way. I don't want the CR people to be pulling that way. I don't want these guys to be pulling this way. I want the weekend people to know that everybody in our church is about discipleship, and you may be on the weekend services, but you're going to be in a small group. If you're not in a small group growing up spiritually, I'm not going to put you on the stage and give you the second most time in the church as the worship guy, but be spiritually immature and not committed to making disciples. You want to be up on that stage, you better be spiritually mature. There's nothing worse than putting a talented person up on stage who's not spiritually mature. Okay? So here's what we're all about. And you understand your piece? What is your piece? What are we doing? We're bringing people to Jesus, and in the weekend services, we are pushing them to become a part of our team. Every door leads there. I want every part of this ministry to understand its individual purpose in the context of everything else. It's not separate. It's a part of the body. Where does it fit? Do you understand the overall purpose, the overall language, and do you understand your piece in it? So if CR knows where they're getting people from and where they eventually want them to get to, CR people might be in small groups for addiction right now, but we don't want you to be stuck in CR for the rest of your life unless you're called to be a CR minister. That's where your calling is. We want you to know you're not labeled because you're an addict. You're a Christian. Everybody's jacked up. Some of our best home group leaders came out of CR. Well, how does that happen? Well, CR has to understand its purpose, where they're getting people from, where they're sending people to, and they have a common language and they understand this. Do you understand what I'm saying? Context, it's not a silo. We all work together. All right? The 101 class, I think you are absolutely flipping nuts if you don't have a 101 class. You're nuts. Now, show me that in the New Testament. Show me an electric guitar in the New Testament. It's not unbiblical, it's abiblical. But it makes no sense to bring people in, both unsaved and saved, from a variety of different systems and not help them understand where we're going and who we are. And then put them in leadership because you have a need. And then you preach a sermon and they go, I didn't know they believed that. Now they're all mad and they tell everybody in their little group and now they're all off. No, here's who we are. This is what we believe in before you get to be on the team. Okay, so you have an entry point for the church. You may visit on Sunday morning. You may come through the small group, but everybody knows 101 class helps us shape who we are. Everybody pointing from every direction goes through the 101 class then back. You want to be in the worship team? You don't get to be a worship person because you're a Christian and because you play well and you're even mature. Because you could be mature but have a different language. You could be a mature Christian, but still not a good teammate because you don't understand the overall language of the church. Do you understand what I'm saying? I know I'm flying, guys. I'm sorry. But there's books on this. But these are all, alignment is key. A house divided against itself cannot stand. Okay? So you've got to set up, think of it in terms of you're setting up fences for the sheep. But here's the problem. No matter what fences you set up, we have the parable of the farmer who goes out and sows the seeds, and in the middle of the night, his enemy comes and plants weeds. We have a enemy who loves to tear down fences. So, as Aaron said, you have to constantly reinforce the purpose of your church. You have to constantly fix the fences. Understand that sheep stray, they stink, and they bite. And the enemy wants them out of the pen. So how do you, especially with your leaders, here's what we are, reinforce over and over and over again. Let me just use a sports analogy. I used to do karate. And I loved karate because I loved like the Chinese, spinning back kicks and all that stuff. And then I got into actual karate, and they don't teach you any of that stuff because you don't do it in a fight. It's for the movies. They teach you very simple things over and over and again. I'm a college wrestler. We didn't learn a bunch of funky moves. It was basics, basics, basics. You win with basics. Do you understand? Every year I was a college wrestler, three-time state champion, three-time college All-American. You want to know what the first month and a half of every wrestling season in college that I went to did? Three basic moves, three basic positions. That's it. Sometimes we just think they're going to get bored because we got to come up with some funky new moves. Here's the problem. They will get bored with any move you show them but don't let them do. Make them do the move, and now it gets exciting. When you're teaching them to do something with it, now it gets hard, and now it gets exciting, and it's not boring. Just teach them about something, and you better come up with something new a lot, because I get bored of Star Wars or whatever movie after three or four times. So when you're talking about alignment, reinforce over and over and over again. Here's who we are. Here's what we're doing. The excitement isn't learning something new. Informationally, the excitement is taking that old gospel message to lost people and seeing them grow up. That gets exciting. So in your services, you want to keep alignment over and over and over again, and then celebrate what you value. So in our church, we measure things like decisions. But I want you to know, I don't celebrate a decision where somebody came to know Christ because I preached a sermon. What we celebrate is not just somebody came to know Christ, but how they came to know Christ. This person came to know Christ through this regular, everyday person who shared their faith with their buddy, and they're up here baptizing this person. We celebrate that a regular person shared Christ with somebody, and somebody got saved. Not just that somebody got saved, but how they got saved. You can do it too. Get in the game. Now you don't need to teach them new stuff. What you really got to do with them is go, it's okay. You're banged up. You're hurt. It's struggle. There's a battle. It's okay. Now you become an encourager to do the things that we're called to do that are very simple, rather than an educator to teach them something new because they're bored. Alignment again and again and again. And that is as quick as I can do it. And I probably went, 2 minutes over? Sorry.
Awesome. Thank you, Jim and Aaron, very much. Can you tell Jim's a little passionate about alignment? Just a touch. It's awesome. Here's what I know about Jim is that whenever we're talking about, and Aaron, what I know about both of them is whenever we're talking about alignment, and we're talking about, like, say, go through a 101 class, or people will continually go off course out of alignment. When relational discipleship is at your core and you value relationship, you will work through it and help them understand the course you want to go. So what I really appreciate about both Jim and Aaron is when somebody's out of alignment, which is constantly, they don't email it done. They don't send a memo, you're out of alignment, right? When our home group leaders or whoever goes through, members, when they go through our 101 and they sign it, do you honestly think they fully understand all the ramifications of signing that, what that's going to mean? Absolutely not. So the expectations is you're going to have to constantly work on alignment through relationship. And that's a huge piece. I appreciate the fact that they both value that, because I would not be on staff if that wasn't the case, because I'm pretty often off course, not as much anymore. All right, let's roll to Q&A. Questions for Jim and Aaron. Raise your hand. I'll pass you the mic. We got one back here. Our
101 class, joining the team class, is about a four-hour class, two different sessions. We used to have 80 to 100 when we did it once a month every time. Now we do it a couple times a month, and so it's between 30 and 40 per time. And typically about 14 denominations represented for that class, and that's not counting. We have a high Mormon population, non-Christians. So getting on the same page is really important on what we believe about things and what's important and what's not a salvation issue. Here's where we stand. Here's where you have freedom. But this is what freedom looks like. in Christ. So there are times where I've got a new group of guys that I'm going to take through the 101 personally in a small group setting. So to me, however way you do it, you've got to take them through it, and then you've got to reinforce it. We have what's called a 301 class, where every year, every person who's in leadership goes back through the 101 covenant, all of our doctrines, what we expect, everything, every single year. We do everything in seasons. When the season's up, there's a break. Before we start again, you have to go back through the playbook again, because what you learned 7 years ago, you don't remember right now if you're a leader. So every year we reinforce alignment.
Excellent. Aaron, you want to add anything to that?
No. Yeah, I guess I do. No. Our 101 is similar. I would say this. Everything that he said about it is right. Just give yourself permission for it to be a bit of a dynamic document, because over the years you will refine better ways to communicate what you're trying to get to, even as in your own mind the thing below the thing below the thing gets clearer. So give yourself permission to change that as you need to. Yeah.
Which is why it's okay to do the 301 every year, because if they took it 7 years ago and you changed it, they're going to get updated this year before we start into the new season.
And I would add this, there's a big difference between monologue and dialogue. If you just monologue it and there's not any opportunity for dialogue, it's hard to have buy-in and understanding if it's just a monologue to your group. So we'd encourage you to do dialogue. Here.
Are all of the churches in your network, do they use the same 101 curriculum, or is that developed uniquely church by church?
Well, our network is independent elder-run churches. I don't believe in doing video venue campuses, because that's personality-driven. You want to raise up people. If we want to raise up home group leaders, why shouldn't senior pastors raise up people who can preach? So we raise them up. We send them out. They have are underneath our authority until they have their own elders. They go through elders training. They set aside their own elders. Then they're an elder-governed church. And they get to decide. The principle's the same, but their 101 will look a little different. Aaron, in his area, he is in one of the only blue parts of the state of Idaho. He has done a brilliant job of understanding where his people are at and adapting what's in that 101 to the questions they're asking.
Yeah. So any place on a broad scale, any place, and I don't know your community, so any place in your community where you would go in there and love on people and they would go, I've never seen a church do this. I'd be like, yeah. So for us, we got highly invested in the college football program in the University of Idaho, which was like, please pray for us. We're terrible. Like, and our prayers didn't work. They're still terrible. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, a lot of those bars, we have a lot of interesting niches in our community. Because of the university, it creates pockets of opportunity, like in the music world, in the theater world. And you got to learn, you got to know how to speak that language if you're going to go in there. Like, don't go in there high academic guy, you know, doctorate in theology and expect to go in and talk to a theater person to make sense. So those kind of pieces, which, to further the case of the need for a team, I can only speak to those that I can speak to, and my team has to be able to fill in those gaps, because the message is true for everybody. And so we have to make sure that they're capable of speaking that language. But we went everywhere. We adopted a school. We bought school supplies for an entire school. And nope. No, and the premise was, how do you tell me, and actually this is something that Jim used to say all the time, I did steal some of your stuff. Some of your stuff was good. If you want to tell me, love my children. And so our question was, if we want to tell our community that we love it, how do we do that? Well, we got to figure out a way to love kids. And so that was something that we did. We adopted a school. We bought school supplies for every student, which did some crazy things that we were not aware of. they said it was the first year that nobody had stolen any school supplies from any other student because they all got the same stuff, which was, we were like, I didn't even see that coming. We partnered with Staples. The store manager and the assistant store manager and two cashiers gave their life to Christ because they're like, we've never seen a church do that before. So not to imagine, like, not even to talk about, like, the families that were affected, like the legitimate single moms that were like, I was going to pay rent or buy school supplies. And that was the real choice, because you guys know the school supplies are $100 per kid. You have three kids, that's $300 for a single mom trying to live in low income housing. That's impossible. That's impossible. Like, it was a huge impact. But those are the kind of things that we paid for a science assembly to come into the school. $350. It was $350. And I was like, yes, a church will pay for a science assembly. That would be awesome. They're like, we never heard of a church doing that before. I was like, I know. Isn't that cool? Like, just be prepared. If you're going to do that, you got to have broad shoulders because people are going to raise their eyebrows. But I'm convinced that this is something I heard in Bible college years ago. Sometimes you got to get so close to the fire that you smell like smoke.
Yeah. So the question is what do you do when somebody wants to join your church? They're very passionate about a ministry they ran at another church, and they want to bring that to your church.
I will echo what he said about the 101 class. So critical as a filter for that. And to have clear expectations of here's our goal. Tell me how this is going to make disciples relationally. Like, that's a simple, it seems silly, but that's a question that we asked ourselves. We catch ourselves running down an idea road, and then Craig Miles would be like, how does this make disciples?
Yep.
Oh, that's stupid. That was a terrible idea.
Him and I together went, the way we decided what ministries we were going to do in our areas, we went to the police department, and we went to the schools, and we said, what do you need? Not what do we want to give you, what do you need? And then we started praying about, God, show us who in our church has this ability, because our desire was to raise people up and release them, right? And one of the other things I would say to those people is, hey, if you want to bring that to our church, because that meant so much to you, go back to that church and make that happen, right? I mean, not that sometimes God does want to do those things in your church. But again, do not allow people to force you as an organization to do something that should be done at an individual level. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? As an individual, you can do a lot of things. That doesn't mean we need to organize and budget line it. What should be done by individuals? And a lot of times they have time to think the church ought to do something because they're not doing anything as an individual. If they're doing something as an individual, they're gonna fill the church has the power to fill every crack and cranny. Right? According to Ephesians 1, go do that thing, but we will do together what we can do together and should do together. We got to go.